First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springson Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringson.com. And while you're at those websites, we would like you to do us a favor. Join our email newsletter and our RSS feed, and our shows will be sent to you direct to your inbox, as well as a weekly update from the website at Louisville Politics. We appreciate every one of you, and there's other ways to get a hold of us. Those are some of the things to make sure you don't miss anything. For you regular callers, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers. For you guys that are in the chat room or in the listening queue, I should say, I apologize. As always, there's a bunch of you guys there. We appreciate it. Just make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad so that we know you want to be heard on air. And for everybody else, if you'd like, come on in the chat room. There's always way for you to get a hold of us, and you can join the chat room either through this link at BTR, or you can join the chat room through Facebook or Twitter account. So there are plenty of ways to get to be heard. Of course, I'm always one of those guys who likes to hear your voice, so I'd love to get you on air. You know, I tell you, we have been spending a lot of time this week, talking about a lot of different things, you know, right here in Louisville with some of the elections and things like that that went on recently. We always keep you up to date on Louisville events, but I tell you, you know, last night we talked a little bit about the Eric Cantor situation. As we know, Eric Cantor is the number two Republican in the U.S. House. He's the number two man of power in the U.S. House, right behind John Boehner himself. And yes, don't get crazy on me for calling him Boehner. I know it's pronounced Boehner, but he's a Boehner, so we call him Boehner here. But anyway, it was very fascinating because David Bratt, a virtually unknown candidate, first-time candidate, you know, defeated Eric Cantor, you know, who had all this political clout, if you will, in the House, had everything in the world, you know, all the power in the world that you can imagine you could have in that position. And the people of Virginia said, so what? They got him off the ballot. Well, we talked a little bit about that last night. Congratulations to David Bratt. He defeated, you know, Eric Cantor quite handily. I think it was right at 11 points. You know, it was a complete shock, maybe one of the biggest political upsets in history. Some people are saying that. You know, so we look at all of this and everything else. Well, you know, you sit here and you talk about a story. You know, it comes down, you're talking about things like this, how it's probably one of the biggest political upsets ever, blah, 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 blah. You know, and then all of a sudden, after the show is over, and throughout the day today, you're getting phone calls. Well, Eric Cantor got screwed, you know, because Virginia is an open primary state. This was nothing more than a bunch of Democrats trying to get rid of him because they're pissed at the Republicans and the House and blah, blah, blah. You know, folks, there's a lot of people who want to claim that today. That started yesterday. I was ignoring it yesterday, but I tell you, after getting, you know, a dozen phone calls today, you know, a couple of dozen emails trying to tell me this, that this was all the Democrat spoilers, that David Bratt was just because the Democrat spoilers wanted to get rid of Cantor. At the end of the day, you got to ask yourself a question. Does it matter? He's gone. You know, that's the first question. The second question I have to ask is a simple one. You know, how far does mainstream media and these type of people want to go to discount true conservatism? And that's exactly what they're trying to do. Now they're trying to, you know, they've been saying for a long time the Tea Party is irrelevant, that it doesn't matter. Now that you've got a Tea Party candidate who pulled a huge upset, much as Rand Paul did just a few short years ago right here in Kentucky, you have to ask yourself these questions. You know, is the Tea Party really dead? It's not looking like it. So Virginia is an open primary state. Fair enough. You walk in, you vote for anybody you want to. No hesitation. They don't ask you which party you're affiliated with. That's okay, too. But when you look at right here in Kentucky, you know, look at where you live, folks. We have people that listen all over the country, indeed all over the world to this show. Look at where you live. And you ask yourself, if you're going to take the chance on losing such huge amount of power for your state and your home for somebody that you don't trust, I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican, are you going to give up a guy who can bring home the bacon to your state and your home for a guy who's going to start at the bottom and you're probably going to suffer for it? Are you going to make yourself intentionally suffer? I don't think Democrats are going to do that. I don't think Republicans are either. You know, it is very interesting. You know, there is, you know, all likelihood that, yes, there were probably some Democrat spoilers. There's a group of people everywhere that do that in these open state, in these open primary states. You'll have a small group of people that would go in and be the spoiler. If you're a Democrat and you want to get rid of Republican, you go in and vote against the Republican. But Republicans do it too, though not on the usual same level that Democrats do. But we have no way to know that, do we? So that's just a guess on my part. You know, but the Democrat, the turnout was definitely higher in the Republican or the known Republican precincts. And David Bratt clearly did better in those areas. But it's fascinating. Cantor lost by 11 points, you know, and Bratt fared the best in Hanover County. Cantor was a little bit closer in other counties, all right, especially in Richmond area. But there were just, you know, in all these other precincts, in the most precincts, you know, there was many or more Republican primary voters as there were for Ken Cuccinelli in the 2013 election for governor. You know, so you've got to look at the big picture here. How can we sit here and say that this is the way it is? How can we sit here and make the claim that Eric Cantor lost because Democrats wanted to get rid of him? There is no defining logic to that. You know, Bratt carried most precincts that Cuccinelli won in 13 with 56% of the vote, you know, which is about the same as, you know, the overall total. You know, it's crazy. So I just don't buy all of this. I don't buy all of this. And quite honestly, you know, I'm going to put a link in the chat room you guys might like. And might not. I mean, a lot of people don't like the source. It's New York Times. But I think they do a good job. They've got a great maps in their story about the turnout and everything else. You know, if you want to sit here and claim that the Democrats were trying to spoil the vote, okay, make that claim. But to sit here and make the claim that that was why David Brott won and Eric Cantor lost just defies any logic or any numerical statistical pattern based on the evidence and things we've looked at today. So, you know, I like those arguments. I do like that Virginia is an open primary. But you know what? I tell you, the thing that I really would like here in Kentucky anyway, and that's what I like about seeing these open primary states. You see, in open primary states, you walk into your polling place or your precinct voting area, and you just vote. You don't have to announce Democrat or Republican or anything else. In Kentucky, you have a choice between being a Republican and a Democrat. But if you're not registered as a Republican or a Democrat, you're not allowed to vote in the primaries that we pay for. I like the middle ground. I like the thing called semi-open primaries that our good friend Michael Lewis at Independent Kentucky has been fighting for a few years. You may remember Michael Lewis in Independent Kentucky just a couple of years ago. They were featured on CNN in about a 10 or 12-minute report on investigating, you know, these states and these semi-open primaries. And Julian Carroll said, if you don't like it, you know, if you don't like the voting process, leave. You know, he told Michael Lewis, if you want a party, we'll give you one. That's what a lot of people have done here, you know. So I like the semi-opens, and I tell you what the difference is. A lot of people like to sit here and they want to say, I don't like these open primaries, and they don't think about the word semi-open. What a semi-open primary is real simple. You register the way you always have. If you want to register as Republican, if you want to identify as a Democrat, if you want to identify as independent, Green Party, other, whatever the hell we want, do it. But on primary election day, when you walk into your precinct voting location to place your vote, then you have a choice. When you walk up, you have to make a decision. Are you going to vote for the Democratic ticket or the Republican ticket? See, that's the difference in a semi-open versus the open. So it's going to make it a lot harder for these so-called spoilers that everybody thinks screwed the pooch in Virginia. Because you don't declare which ballot you want until you get to the voting location. So if you've got a Democrat friend of yours or somebody that you know that's on the Democrats that you really want to support, are you going to be a spoiler and vote on a Republican ticket and screw that candidate? You know what I mean? I mean, that's the thing. And that's what I like. But, you know, at the same time, as I mentioned, you know, that means that every independent and everybody else, all these others, if you will, that Kentucky classifies anybody who's not one of the two-party establishments, like I said, then they could be allowed to vote in the primaries as well. Because they're not now. They're paying for something that they can't get involved in. So that's the difference between a semi-open and the open. You know, as a registered independent, you walk into the polling place, you identify, you say, okay, I want to vote Democrat or Republican ballot. It's your choice. The day of the election when you show up. In Virginia, you don't have to bother with that. In Virginia, you just go in and vote. So it's kind of hard to tell how many spoiler votes were there and how many weren't, but there is no way that I can fathom, based on the available evidence, that Eric Cantor got beat because of these spoilers who don't like the power and don't like Eric Cantor. It makes no sense, especially when Eric Cantor is the number two guy in Washington's House of Representatives, in our U.S. House of Representatives, and has all of this power to bring home to his state of Virginia. So to sit here and think that the Virginian people, that the Democrats, would sit here and intentionally take this guy out and hurt their own state and their own home just because they can, no, that doesn't happen. That defies logic. So I wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about that at the start of the show. Don't forget, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers. And the listening queue, hit that number one on your dial pad. We, you know, our good friend Paul over at Stop It, he's a regular to the show. Over Stop Invisible Taxes. He just put in there, Cantor can canter his ass right out of Congress. Yeah, you're right, Paul. He is. He's going to walk out with his head between his legs, I'll tell you that. You know, Paul, I tell you, and for the rest of you guys, you know, that would have to be one of the most, you know, embarrassing things ever for the power elite to be beat that handily. I mean, really, you know. And, you know, and again, like I said, everybody says that this was the upset, you know, this is probably the biggest upset in history. There have been quite a few people talking that line today. I'm not necessarily by that. I mean, here in Kentucky, we had what should be considered great upsets. We had Rand Paul destroy Trey Grayson in a Republican primary, and Trey Grayson had all the Republican establishments behind them just as much as Eric Cantor did. And he blew Trey Grayson out of the water. And then in the general election, Jack Conway, the Attorney General of Kentucky, who a lot of people think are corrupt, I'm one of them, you know, he was supposed to be the golden boy. He was a Democratic Party golden boy. And everybody just expected him to win. Rand Paul blew him out of the water. So in my opinion, you've got two different daggone elections here right in Kentucky in the last few years that would match what David Bratt did to Eric Cantor. You know, that's just my opinion. Now, understanding, though, that seat was not held by a top-level person in our U.S. Congress. It was not held by somebody with the power of Eric Cantor. So I'll give you that. I'll give you that, just based on that power structure. But it is so fascinating. So, you know, I just wanted to talk about that for a few minutes, make sure we got on the same page there. Didn't want anybody thinking I was, you know, stupid. I'm not. You know, I was just funny when I started getting calls today and things like that telling me, you know, he was just hurt because of all of the vote splitters and blah, blah, blah. No, I'm sorry, folks. You don't lose by 11 points because of vote splitters. You just really, really don't. So, you know, and some of the things, you know, that David Bratt was saying was things that I know a lot of people have been talking about for years. I'm one of them, you know, term limits. I mean, one of the big promises he made during this election was to fight for term limits, including for himself. I think that's very important. You know, it would be easy to go in and fight for term limits for the people who come after you. But now I said, hey, look, I want those term limits put into effect as quick as possible, even during my term, and I'll pay for it. You know, I'll be out of a job, too. So I thought that was pretty good, too. So, you know, and then, of course, the anti-immigration bill, that's now dead in the Senate. You know, even Harry Reid voted against the Democrats' proposal in the Senate for immigration. You know, he's trying to act like all, you know, well, it was just because it was just, you know, wasn't set up right. There were procedural things. That's always his fallback, so I found that pretty amusing. But, you know, we've got all these different things. You know, and good point, Paul. Good point. John Thune ousted Tom Daschle in South Dakota just a few years ago. He was a big underdog as well. So we see these things happen. We see these things happen all the time. And we've got to make sure that we continue spending time pointing these things out. That's why we're doing it tonight, just like we probably put some time in it last night. Because people in America need to wake up. They need to know how important their vote really is. Now, does this mean I want a bunch of uninformed people out there casting votes? No. I want people to be informed when they go to the polls. But I want them to hold their candidates accountable to real discussions of the issues and not the mudsling like we're used to here in Kentucky. When we start getting people like David Brad elected, we're actually getting better candidates because we're forcing the discussion ahead. We're forcing ourselves away from the mudslinging. We're forcing people to pay attention, all right? And we're putting new blood in Congress. I mean, think about this. You think about the Tea Party, for example, and you think about what's going on in Congress these days. You're hearing Ted Cruz. You're hearing Justin Amash. You're hearing people like Tom Massey, you know, another underdog here in Kentucky. You're hearing Rand Paul, now David Brad, taking out the number two guy. We have continued, as an electorate, we the people have continued going down the road and taking chances. We are now starting to get to that point where we can go down the road and take chances and put new blood in there because we see the whole world isn't going to fall apart and we don't have to get stuck. We don't have to be stuck with all these lifetime career politicians who don't have a clue and don't care. And don't care. Now, I've got to tell you some disturbing news. I read an article today, and it was kind of stunning. It really was. I was really, really surprised by this article. And I tell you why. Because it was an article, I believe it was out of Liberty News or something like that. But it was basically telling us or asking the question, are these changes too late? And there's a good reason for that, because last year, the GDP was $2.6 trillion. That's how much money the U.S. took in. Just under debt service and some other things, they've spent $2.5 trillion. That leaves $100 billion for everything else. And that means, when I say everything else, I mean every social program out there, military spending, everything. It's alarming when you look at that and you wonder why we're borrowing money. This debt service is going to be with us. We're going to have to cut back somewhere very quickly to make the changes to save financially this thing we call the United States of America. But it is interesting. You know, so is it too little, too late getting new people? I don't know. Maybe the people realize those changes had to be made. Maybe they're willing to sacrifice now so that we can make America strong again. We're going to find out going forward. I'm not a soccer guy, but we've got an update in here in the chat room. Brazil defeated Croatia 3-1 today, so that ought to be good for you World Cup followers. Paul is talking. Well, Paul, you know, you got a point there. It's a story I really haven't followed too much. But Venezuela, of course, they've got socialism. They got their own brand of socialism, and they're getting bombarded with daily protests by the citizens about government policies, inflation, all of that stuff. Brazil has been on the map for all these demonstrations and strikes because of all the extra and excessive spending on the World Cup. It's interesting. It's interesting when you look at that because there's so many people in Brazil living in poverty. And you're spending massive amounts of money on the World Cup, you gotta start questioning priorities there, don't you? I mean, we got the same problem here. We've got a little over 38% of the people unemployed. One out of every two Americans is drawing government assistance or subsidies in one form or another. I don't think there's much doubt anymore that we are no longer a republic or a democracy. I think you can throw those terms when it comes to the United States of America out the window right now. So, Paul, you're right. That makes a big difference. Anybody who's paying attention to the retirement crisis throughout the country, these pension crises throughout the country. You know that there's a serious problem. The people who have been paid into pensions or people who are guaranteed a pension from their employers and everything else are going to be having some major problems trying to collect on that because, quite frankly, they have been promised more than can ever be delivered. Truthfully, I mean, let's call a spade here. Most of these pension crises are there because government officials and a lot of government employees, including these government officials, are getting more for less. And you ask yourself, what do you mean by getting more for less? Well, it's simple, really. Your elected officials here in Kentucky are going back in what we call double dipping. And what that means is they're staying on the job 20 years, retiring, and then getting hired right back in the same position like a new hire and drawing their full retirement at the same time. So they're getting a double paycheck for doing the same job they were doing before. Government employees' pensions are loaded with gold. Because here in Kentucky, the Democrats are so busy kissing their union's butt to make sure they make power and get the union vote and the union help in elections that they give the unions anything they want for the most part. Especially when it comes to pensions, retirements, and things like that. Because that's money that don't have to be paid up front. That's the can that's kicked down the road. So we had an interesting case last month here in Kentucky that basically involved seven-county services who aren't government employees, but they're in the Kentucky retirement system, or the KRS. It's fascinating. Federal judge ruled, and it might have been around the 1st of June, it was sometime last week, I think, but the federal judge ruled at that point that this quasi-governmental agencies, which is what they consider places like seven-county services, can't be considered government agencies at all, and they have the right to leave the Kentucky retirement system so that they can escape pension debt. So what did that mean? That means the government, who has been forcing people like them into the KRS to fund their pensions and retirement and stuff, no longer can do that. And, of course, our governor, lovely Democratic Governor Steve Beshear, thinks that's just totally wrong. He's going out there and he's saying that we're going to appeal this, putting it up and open to appeal. He says because it creates an unfunded liability for the rest of the people on the system. All right, because if you allow a quasi-governmental entity to leave the system and not be responsible for their part of the unfunded liability that you helped to create, that's just unfair to the whole system. Well. You think about that. Think about that statement. You're going to leave the system and not be responsible for your part of the unfunded liability, and that's unfair to the whole system. Folks, that is one of the most comical statements ever, and it just proves the point. Here in Kentucky, our current unfunded liability in the Kentucky retirement system is about $17 billion, most of which is created because of the cushy pension for elected politicians and our government union employees. That's the truth. Once this appeal is over, if this holds true and they're allowed out, it's going to cost the state a couple million bucks in new unfunded pension liabilities. Yes. But how much is it really going to save? If seven counties is no longer forced to operate within Kentucky retirement system, and they can go out and join a different retirement system or fund their own retirement and not be beholden to all of these daggone money that they have to give the state or the Commonwealth of Kentucky that these Democrats are making everyone do so they can cover their asses for the union losses and the political elected losses. I mean, you think about that. You think about that. But we're unfunded. Our retirement system, the state retirement system, is unfunded by over $17 billion. And somehow, some way, that's one small company's fault. How do you think about that? Chris Tobey has been on our show. Chris Tobey is an author and investor and everything else. Chris Tobey has worked for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Chris Tobey is an author who wrote a book called Kentucky Fried Pensions. I strongly urge anyone who listens to this show to purchase that book. You can find it online and read it. It's not just Kentucky here, folks. But that book really details how Kentucky got in this mess and what the real problems really are and why it's going to cripple us. And it's a lesson that is, well, it's really the same game all over the country. So don't get hung up on the name Kentucky Fried Pensions. Read the book. It's a fascinating book. I mean, the KRS has been getting in trouble for years for risky investments, underperformance of their portfolios. You know, it's ungodly. I think I don't know what the actual amount is. I think it's like $17.6 billion, but I know it's $17 billion and up for unfunded liabilities. And somehow, some way, this is seven counties' fault. Never mind the double dippers, and in some cases, triple dippers. Never mind all of that. Doesn't matter. Never mind that, you know, these Democrats go out here telling the unions, we're going to give you all of this, but you've got to give us X amount of money to keep us in office. You know, never mind all of that, that they're buying the vote through your tax dollars. No, never mind all that. It surely cannot be the failure of a retirement system set up and ran by Democrats. It can't be. It's impossible. You know, so I thought that was a story worth bringing up. You know, I wanted to make sure we pointed that out. Another interesting tidbit on a local level. We just got all the Louisville bar evaluations in. And most of the judges fared pretty well. A couple that I wanted to point out, though. Jefferson District Judge Sandra McLaughlin, who was elected a couple of years ago. We told the whole world that she shouldn't be judged. She didn't have the temperament. She wasn't qualified. And there were a whole lot of reasons for that. She won her election. Because of a few connections, she won her election. She was ranked the worst judge. Only 26% of the people who responded on the questionnaires, 26% were satisfied with the performance of Jefferson County District Judge Sandra McLaughlin right here in Louisville. 74% say she does a bad job when you look at it. 26%. The next one closest to her was somebody else that, you know, we think their time is done. We should replace. That's Annette Karam. Annette Karam was the only other judge below 77%. Annette Karam received 54% as being generally satisfied. Now, you think about that. And, of course, McLaughlin could not, you know, be in reach for comment. You can go to WFPL.org. They've got a great... They've got the entire program on there. You know, they've got the entire questionnaire, how it responded. They've got all the details for you. But yeah, 26%. And yeah, I'm looking at the chat room here. I apologize. It's funny. I'm looking at the chat room, and our good friend Paul is pointing out, yeah, because Sandra McLaughlin hangs with federal felons. Well, yes, she does. You know, yes, she does. And I've got no problem putting that out there. Guy by the name of Donnie Disler out here. Great. He was a great friend of Bob Henderson, former Councilman Bob Henderson. There's a lot of reasons for that. I can tell you the rumors, but Bob Henderson's not in office anymore, so why worry about that? But Disler is a federal felon. If I'm not mistaken, his felony was because he blew up the sewers downtown. Remember the Hill Street sewers that blew? You know, And he was Sandra McLaughlin's biggest supporter, and she was running around proud of it. She was running around proud of it. She was kissing his butt like nothing you'd ever seen before. You know, and she's got a 26% approval rating because a federal felon backed her. Somebody explain that to me. I really don't get it. I just thought it was very, very interesting. Here's one of the stories of the day, but you know what? I'm going to wait. I'm going to tease you. We're going to go to a break. It's already after the bottom of the hour, man. This hour's flying by. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about California. Yeah, you're right. California. But I think you're going to be as surprised as I was by the content when we get here. I'll see you in a minute, folks. You're listening to the Ed Springs Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Welcome back, folks. Welcome back to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringsteen.com. Do not forget to join our email newsletter and our RSS feed while you're there so we can make sure we get all our latest to you direct to your inbox. I got to correct one thing. I told you guys I speculated. I wasn't positive, and I said that, but Donnie Disler, we were talking about before the break, federal felon that helped Sandra McLaughlin get elected. I speculated that his company was responsible for blowing up the sewers here in Louisville. I was wrong. That isn't what he went to jail for. It's my apologies. But in March of 1977, MSD employees at a Morris Forming plant started noticing some bad chemical odor, and they were getting sick, 17 of them or more. There was a lot of them hospitalized. Anyway, it took a week to figure out what was causing it. And it was chemicals called hexa and octa is what they're commonly referred to. They're very toxic chemicals that are used in pesticides. So the Morris Forming plant was shut down in late March and discharged 100 million gallons of untreated wastewater every single day into the river. They actually brought the U.S. Army teams in here wearing protective gear and everything else, getting into the sewers to find the source of the chemicals. The FBI joined in, and lo and behold, that's where Donnie Disler comes in, folks. Donnie Disler, Donald E. Disler, D-I-S-T-L-E-R, yes, you can look it up, was the then president of Kentucky Liquid Recycling. Him and two of his employees were dumping these chemicals into the sewers. They were being paid to recycle these chemicals, and they weren't doing anything but dumping them into the sewers. That's a hell of a profit there, folks, let me tell you. But you know, these were chemicals that had been sent to his company for disposal. Disler decided to dump them down a manhole in western Louisville. Anyway, the treatment plant was down for like 3 months. while all the contaminated stuff was removed, all the raw sewage was going into the water. It was an ugly time here in Louisville. But these are the kind of people that got Sandra McLaughlin. You know, they got her elected. She's going to be a great judge. Yeah, she's going to be a great judge if you get in trouble again. Now, I could tell you this, too, from firsthand knowledge, for anybody that cares. You know, Donnie Disler himself, you know, was very, very close to Bob Henderson. Now, take it for what it's worth, because anything I say from this point on will be called hearsay. It's hearsay because you're only hearing my side of it, and there's no way I can tell you the truth, or I can back this up on you, because I always tell you the truth. But, you know, out here in the South End, we used to have a little thing called Citizens for Better Metro Government. It was an activist group out here. They really don't do a lot anymore. But we were very active in trying to make changes out here, very active in holding Councilman Bob Henderson accountable for a lot of things. Donnie Disler and Bob Henderson had a falling out a few years ago. And essentially, Disler hates Henderson at this time. Now, anyway, we were sitting there before a meeting started one night. We were talking about some of the problems we were having out here and what Bob Henderson was really doing. And Disler decided to volunteer to me, not asked at all. I had no idea that they even knew each other. I just thought he hated the guy based on his politics. But Disler told me himself, you know, he goes, I know all about Bob Henderson. That son of a bitch used to steal from the fucking railroad, those are his words, not mine, and bring it to me, and I'd go fence it for him. At that point, I found out more than I needed to know, because I had no idea too much about Donnie Disler at that time. I had never done a background check. I've never had to. I just saw him at these meetings, right? But he told me that, and then I realized what type of person he was, and then I investigated, and that's when I found out he was a federal felon. This was a few years ago. But these are the type of people that, you know, get elected, you know, get judges elected so they can make sure they get favor if they get caught again. So here's a guy who got caught dumping all these chemicals into the Louisville wastewater system, admits or states that he was fencing stolen goods from Bob Henderson, a councilman Henderson at the time, who was stealing from a railroad he worked at. It's no wonder Sandra McLaughlin got 26%. But, you know, I want to move on because I told you guys going into break, I just wanted to get that cleared up. But I told you guys going into break, we had a great story coming out of California, and here is why. California, and the first of its kind court ruling, and believe it or not, this source is Huffington Post, but California courts ruled that California's union-backed teacher tenure, layoff, and dismissal laws infringe on students' rights to an equal public education. In short, 9 students sued the school system because of their policy on teacher tenure and all this stuff. And a judge in Los Angeles on Tuesday sided with these 9 students. They were suing to overturn the state statutes governing teacher hiring and firing. The students claimed that they served no compelling purpose and that this had led to an unfair system that was forcing new teachers from the classroom while allowing incompetent senior teachers to remain. How bad is it when your students have to sue you to get a better education? I mean, think about that. And you're talking about California, one of the most liberal states in the continental U.S., folks. You think about that. 9 students had to sue and say, hey, when you bring in good teachers that are young enough that can teach us, and you lay them off or you get rid of them because you got some old broad over here who can't remember how to tie her shoes in the morning because she's got tenure, that's a problem for us. We can't learn from people who don't have the capability to teach us. Students, kids, our youth, great example of our youth and our children begging us to teach them. I find that story fascinating. I really do. As much as we talk about education, we talk about these school boards, we talk about these unions, you know, the JCTA right here in Louisville is a great example of all the things that are wrong with our education system. You know, now this doesn't apply anywhere else, obviously. This is in California. This is in L.A. But it'll go through the appeals process, and if it continues going through the appeals process, somewhere it's going to end up before the U.S. Supreme Court, and then it will become law of the land that's going to affect all of us. Because it's not going to go away now. The cat's out of the bag. The cat's out of the bag. And I find it fascinating. This is the first time that any court has declared that teacher tenure and job guarantees are unconstitutional. I mean, this is the same stuff we've been fighting about here in so many states across the nation. It's unreal. But now, 9 students showed us the way. And, of course, you know, you get the pushback, you know, like the National Education Association, the NEA president, Dennis Van Roekel. You know, it's funny. You know, California's Teachers Union is an affiliate of the NEA. And the president, Dennis Van Roekel, goes on and says this decision is deeply flawed, and it's going to make it so much harder to retain quality teachers. How does this make it harder to retain quality teachers? I want somebody to tell me that. I want somebody to tell me that. Because if teachers were required to do some kind of a testing situation or some kind of an evaluation system that was fair across the board, you're obviously going to pick the brightest and the best to keep, right? So how is this going to keep qualified teachers out of the classroom? Now, I can tell you from my own experience, my kids have only been out of school a few years. But I can tell you from my own experience, it's fascinating. It's fascinating what some of these teachers who have been on a job for 20 years and more think. There is no talking to them, even in parent-teacher conferences. They've seen it all. They've heard it all. They don't care. Oh, they say they do. Well, I care about my students or I wouldn't be teaching. When it comes time to worry about their paycheck, but on a day-to-day basis, I've seen everything in the world. I've seen no tolerance policies ignored because a teacher favored a student. I've seen racism by teachers because she didn't like white kids. Yes, Miss Jordan from over at Eisenhower, I remember you. Seen all kinds of things. That's not quality. I find that story fascinating for that reason. We might finally have a chance to make sure that we get quality education professionals in our classrooms. But the fight had to come from kids who were suffering from it. We didn't have an adult that made this happen. Because they had common sense and good judgment, we had to have 9 students who were suffering. 9 students who were suffering from a poor education to make this decision happen. Will it stand up? I don't know. I really, truly don't know. But for me, it gives me faith in our future with our kids. If these kids in California, the most liberal state or one of the most liberal states in the union, feel that strongly about their education and they're not getting proper education because of these union guarantees and this teacher tenure that there's, you know, is keeping them from progressing their education, more power to them. I really believe that. So California, damn, I never saw or see this day, but this is for you. Believe me, folks, that was one of the hardest buttons I've ever pushed. I never thought I'd see the day where California would get it right and not do everything from a liberal standpoint. But hey, you know, things happen, right? People can change over a new leaf. Unfortunately, there are some people who will never change over a new leaf. Last night we talked a little bit about Bo Bergdahl, and I meant to talk more about it tonight, and I kind of got long-winded on some other stories, and my apologies to you guys. But as we know, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl has been freed. The only POW in Afghanistan, a traitor, a deserter, and we released five top Taliban people to get him back. These Taliban people will murder hundreds or even thousands of Americans or others around the world because that's what they do. To free one person who didn't want to be an American. Sorry, it's my opinion. I'm entitled to it. But the person who will never change is a person who wants you to elect them for president in 2016. The name is Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is defending the deal that freed Bo Bergdahl. She, using the same line that she used during the Benghazi scandal that she will never be held accountable to. She was asked questions in an interview with ABC's Diane Sawyer, aired last Friday, and she was asked about this, and she said it doesn't matter. She was asked questions about how he fell into the hands of the Taliban. And he walked into their hands. He walked into their loving arms. As soon as he walked into their loving arms, we started getting attacks we'd never been attacked before because he knew information. He shared it. Cost at least eight lives searching for him. But Hillary Clinton says it doesn't matter. Now, I'll be fair. Mainstream media isn't, but I will be. She said it didn't matter because we bring our people home. As a veteran, I find it insulting that we lost eight American lives, we jeopardized hundreds and even thousands of other lives, for one guy who willingly walked away from his safe environment because he didn't like being there, because he didn't like being an American. That's the truth. That's disturbing to me. And that's not the only thing that disturbs me. Of course, you know, there's all kinds of things that disturb me about Hillary Clinton. But when you look at this, when you look at this and you look at the Benghazi incidents, you look at everything that's happened under her watch as Secretary of State, you look at everything. Well, I mean, everything she's done her whole life. I mean, let's really sit here and call a spade, folks. Because Hillary Clinton would have been disbarred under any normal situation. She would have never been an attorney and never had these opportunities or anything else if it wasn't for politics back in the 70s. She was facing disbarment for intentionally lying about information during the Watergate scandal with Richard Nixon. Nobody else would have been disbarred, but she had connections then, and she used them and wasn't. And look at where it's led to. She's got a history of lying and deceit and doing anything she wants to. There's still all kinds of questions about her and her husband, you know, during their time in the White House. How she's even considered to be any kind of potential challenger for the White House and 2016 is beyond me. And then to top it all off, not content with going out there and spewing her rhetoric and living the lies and destroying Americans, that's not bad enough. No, now she has to go out here and try to lie to the poor and the weakest among us so that she can set the stage for this run. 3 days ago, on Monday, Hillary Clinton, this is in the New York Post, by the way, you can read this story. Hillary Clinton was doing an interview with the Post and trying to convince the whole world that she understands how it is to be poor. Because her and Bill Clinton were dead broke after leaving the White House, and they were struggling to make ends meet. They were dead broke and struggling to find a Big Mac, I guess, for Bill. But she says, we came out of the White House not only dead broke, but in debt. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That is so laughable, it's beyond pathetic. She said they had no money when they got to the White House. They didn't have the money for mortgages, houses, or for Chelsea's education. It was just so hard, they didn't have any money, dead broke, and were really, really suffering. I don't want to hear that crap. I'm sorry, but those people were never dead broke and suffering for all of this stuff. She had a nice cushy job at Walmart at one point. Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas at one point. You know, if they were dead broke, everything's handed to them on a silver platter because of who they are. Don't try to convince me. You know what it's like to be poor when you left the White House. You want to tell me what it was like to be poor when you were 20 and 21 years old 50 years ago and you remember what it felt like? We both know you don't remember that. But don't sit here and talk to me about being poor when you leave the White House as a president or first lady. That just defies logic. It's incredible. It really is. You know, then she talks about how they had to pay off their debts. You know, they had to make double the money because of taxes to pay off their debts, you know, and get them a house and all of that good stuff, take care of the family. You know, I find that so laughable. You know, they had a real problem. Terry McAuliffe, who's the governor of Virginia now, gave them $1.3 million to purchase the house in New York that they bought so that she could, you know, establish residency and get elected in New York. You know, I can't do that. Can you do that? Why, you know, if you're dead broke, you don't go out and buy a $1.7 million house. Dead broke, you're living in a cheap one-bedroom apartment somewhere, trying to kill roaches before they eat your food. That's dead broke. Don't talk to me about being dead broke when you left the White House and the first thing you did was buy a $1.7 million house. And then you built the property on the house so that Secret Service could live on the property and our federal tax money, our government money, is paying you every month for rent on that Secret Service that's paying the mortgage on your house. It didn't cost you a dime, not one dime. Made $109 million. That's right, folks. $109 million between 2000 and 2007. They paid in $34 million in taxes. So that's a third of their income, not half like she claimed. They bought another house, a $2.9 million home on Embassy Row, which is where she was at with Diane Sawyer. You know, she gives speeches for $200,000 a pop. You know, $200,000 a pop, I could do one speech every 3 years and meet my living needs. I think most people could. I think it would be easy to do. You know, and then she had the audacity to tell Diane Sawyer, I thought making speeches for money was a much better thing than getting connected with any group or company, as so many people who leave public life do. So she tried to put this, you know, this ploy out there that I'm not going to be a lobbyist because I'm above that, and I'm not going to take advantage of people like they do. Hillary, you really can't make those kind of statements when you're out there giving your name and letting everybody use it, like Goldman Sachs, Fidelity, Carlyle Group, you know, Realtors Group, a drugstore group. You know, and I just don't buy all that stuff. So when it comes to Hillary Clinton as a candidate, when I look back at all the scandals that have plagued these Clintons for all of these years, I look at the lies and deception still going on today as they were in the 1970s from Watergate. You can put together a history of over 40 years where there is nothing that's been believable, honest, or fair out of these people at all. Scum is scum, and I'm not afraid to tell Hillary Clinton she is scum, to my opinion. That's the truth. Does that upset some people? Sure it does. But I really don't care. Don't sit here and try to tell me you know what it's like to be me or what it's like to be so many unfortunate Americans, you know, I look rich to them. They struggle every day for basic needs. They don't have people that are going to go out there and give them the money to buy a $1.7 million home and then claim they're broke. They don't have money to go out there and you know, they don't have a way to get the government to pay for everything, although there's many people that do. It's pathetic. It's condescending. That's just not right. But I tell you one thing that is right. We are out of time. Man, I really wouldn't. I went to the wire tonight. My apologies. Folks, I tell you, that is it for tonight. Sunday night at 7 o'clock, Ken Mullen will be here with his normal Liberty Unbridled hour. I think we have a good time with that. And I'll be back on Monday of next week. Until then, folks, have a great night. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.